Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Athens for the latest on your Georgia Bulldogs. This is Bulldog Roundtable exclusively on The Fan. Live from the Georgia's own Credit Union studios at the Buttsmere Building in Athens.
25-20, far sideline, 15, 10, 5, get in there, touchdown!
This morning, The Fan staff brings you the latest on the Dogs.
As the only station in Atlanta that's live in Athens all year long.
Yes, indeed! That was too easy!
Bulldog Roundtable is proudly presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union. Find out how you can become one of Georgia's Own at georgiasown.org. Georgia Pack and Load. Move the smart way. Move the pack and load way. Call 1-800-800-MOVE or online at gapackandload.com. Wellstar Health System. More than health care, people care. And by attorney Ken Nugent. One call, that's all.
And that's going to be the ball game. Georgia will win this ball game.
Now, live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union studio in the Buttsmere Building in Athens. It's Chuck Dowdle on the Bulldog Roundtable.
Woo! What a night on this campus last night as the Dogs knock off Kentucky 63-62 at Stegman Coliseum and snap a 14-game losing streak to the Wildcats. But a big win for Tom Crean's squad last night, and just congratulations to them. They've got Florida now coming in at 2 o'clock on Saturday. So, but a big night here, and congratulations to the Dogs hitting a last second shot, PJ Horn, to win it by a point. And Georgia led throughout much of the game, so it was not a fluke by any stretch. But coming to you live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union studios right here on campus at the University of Georgia, and presented by Georgia Pack and Load, Wellstar Health System, and attorney Ken Nugent. It is indeed the Bulldog Roundtable. And because it is any time of the year, it is time to talk college football. And you can have nobody better to talk to than Mark Schlabaugh, one of the best writers and reporters anywhere in the country. And he is a columnist for ESPN.com. And Mark, appreciate your time this morning. And I have to ask you, you know, you were one of the first to come out as soon as the bowl games, the championship game got played and was over. And I know you were thinking, well, I'll write something entertaining. And you write the way too early top 25, and immediately you start to get blowback from people going, well, why did you do this? Why did you put them there?
Yeah, we've done that for probably the last 10 or 12 years, Chuck. And, it's fun and it's entertaining. I don't know how much science actually goes into it. But, it takes a couple of weeks, and it was more difficult this year just because the NCAA gave, seniors an opportunity to come back. So you really had to monitor everything and see who was leaving and who was staying. And, it's gotten to the point, unfortunately, college football has become so top-heavy that it's typically Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Oklahoma, in some sort of order among the top five, and then everybody else kind of falls in place behind them.
Yeah, and what, when do you think we will see more equity? I mean, people are still pounding the table wanting an 18 playoff. I'm just wondering what they think that'll accomplish.
Well, I mean, it'll give three other teams and those five I just mentioned a chance to get in, because I don't think it's going to change, and I think it's probably only going to get worse. And I've heard people screaming and yelling to give kids a one-time transfer and to make it easier for them to change schools, and I think we're going to see more and more of what's happened to South Carolina and what's happening at Tennessee. As soon as a coach is fired or as soon as a coach leaves or a program hits the skids, you're going to see the mice jumping ship. And, I can't blame the kids at Tennessee because of what's going on up there. It's, they're probably not going to play in the postseason for at least a year or two, and it's a 4 or 5 year rebuilding job. But when you let those kids transfer without penalty, you're going to see Alabama and Georgia and some other places just continue to get more better players and load up and fill holes.
You bring up a great point, Mark, and I'm sure when you're hearing that people are liking would like to see the one-time transfer, I'm sure you're not hearing that from coaches because they've got enough problems with roster management as it is.
Yeah, and you're not going to hear it from Greg Sankey or some of the other conference commissioners. I think it's why Sankey was so adamant about not wanting to let guys transfer within the conference without sitting out a year, because he has a difficult enough time keeping these guys away from each other's throats, you know, when they're recruiting high school players. And again, you know, if stuff happens like it's happened at South Carolina and Tennessee, you're going to see programs within the SEC try to poach players from there. So we'll just see. It's a mess. There needs to be, you know, talking to a lot of coaches within the league and around the country, they almost feel like there needs to be a reset in the sport and try to figure this thing out.
Talking with Mark Schlabaugh, the columnist for ESPN.com. And, Mark, when you look back just 9-10 months ago, and you see what we were able to get accomplished as far as getting a season in. It was not the season we wanted. It was certainly not the season that we had thought we would see, but we got it in. Are there lessons to be learned from it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, going back to as late as June or July, I was still somewhat pessimistic. We saw what happened with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, just in terms of their concerns about the long-term health effects of coronavirus and myocarditis and heart inflammation. There just wasn't really enough available information to them to make the decision to go ahead and play. But, you know, they obviously came on later, and I think you got to commend the SEC and Greg Sankey and the presidents and ADs and, most importantly, the coaches and players for making the sacrifices to get it done. But, you know, I wonder – I'm sorry. I'm in a shopping center.
That's okay.
Does it have to be a year-round sport? I mean, we went the entire summer for the most part without kids going through weight training, off-season conditioning, 7-on-7 all summer. Right. You know, we didn't have recruits on campus. I think there's a way to save millions and millions of dollars in terms of recruiting and operating budgets, and to give these coaches and kids some time off during the summer. I mean, I can remember when I worked at the AJC 25 years ago, once spring football ended, you really didn't have to do anything else until late July, early August, when we had SEC media days and the start of preseason camp. So, you know, I think getting away from a year-round sport may help.
What about, when you look at the SEC, and there were only two games, and this is, to me, mind-boggling, only two games missed. Now, Georgia missed one of them, but there were only two games missed all season. That's when you take into consideration all that went on across the country, that's amazing.
It goes back to the sacrifices the kids made and their parents made and coaches made to have the discipline and fortitude to not want to go to downtown Athens every night, you know, not going to the fraternity parties, not going, you know, to your girlfriend's house. I mean, these kids made a hell of a sacrifice. I mean, they surrendered a lot. And I think, again, I think you give them all the credit because they kept a lot of businesses in business, probably kept me employed for a few more years. And, you appreciate it.
What about, and I've asked this of a number of people, and the answer varies, but how would you feel about, or do you feel, that it would be good for the sport to have a commissioner of college football?
I think it would be good, because I think what we saw in the months leading up to the season is that each of the Power Five conferences, for the most part, was looking out for itself. And I mean, that's the nature of the business right now, with the television contracts and everything else being separate. You know, those leagues were looking out for their own interests and their schools' interests. One of the most surprising things and disappointing things to me during the entire process, you know, the pandemic, was that these leagues weren't communicating with each other. There didn't seem to be this collective resolve to get a season in and to work together. Now, I think some leagues were working together more than others. I think the SEC was kind of in step with the ACC and the Big 12, but it just seemed like the Big 10 and the Pac-12 were out there on their own island. But, hell, I think there are a lot of people who would love to see Nick Saban become the commissioner and get off the sidelines. And, you know, he and I have had conversations for a long time on what needs to happen for the support, you know, for the sport to continue to flourish and thrive. And, you know, going back to what can change, you know, I think the 10-game SEC schedule, hopefully it sticks around. And I've said for a while now that there are probably 50 to 60 teams that need to be playing at the Power Five level. And with all due respect, you know, to schools like Georgia State and Georgia Southern really need to be trying to compete in the same division with Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and others. I think there's room for a second division between the Power Five and the FCS. And I think it would solve some of the attendance issues and, you know, and then probably generate more interest in the sport if those big schools are playing each other every week.
Mark, you always have great vision for looking at the sports and the way things could be or perhaps even should be, and always appreciate your time and your insight into what's going on in not just college football but across the board in college athletics. But I'll let you get back to your shopping. My birthday's in mid-February. If you need my sizes.
I'm looking for replacement washing machines once again. Thanks, Chuck.
I don't need one of those. Yeah. All right, Mark Slabaugh, senior writer for ESPN.com. Always great to have Mark on the show here on the Bulldog Roundtable. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and travel up to Knoxville, find out exactly what's going on in Big Orange Country. That's next.
The only Atlanta station broadcasting live from Athens all year long.
This is Bulldog Roundtable on The Fan.
This is Bulldog Roundtable with Chuck Dowd.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Live from the Georgia's Own Credit Union Studios in the Butzmir Center in Athens on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
Welcome back. I think it is fair to say it has been a tough week up in Knoxville, starting with the news that broke on Monday. And let's get the very latest that's going on up there at the University of Tennessee with Josh Ward. He hosts Sports 180 on the Sports Animal in Knoxville. And Josh, thanks for your time this morning. And kind of bring us up to speed. You know, there are all kinds of stories floating around. And, you know, we started to hear some rumors. When did it first become real to Tennessee fans that there was something really amiss?
I think it became real on December 19th when Tennessee's playing Texas A&M and the report of the internal investigation came out in the middle of the game, because I think a lot of people immediately said, wait a minute, this report's coming out in the middle of the game that Jeremy Pruitt's coaching to close out the season, knowing that there was already a hot seat there with Tennessee's head coach. And then as time went on over the next month and there continued to be rumors and speculation about his future, and Tennessee at no point shot any of that down, that was very telling, right? So it was a matter of when something would happen, and we knew that the investigation was moving. They had to interview the head coach, and very quickly after Jeremy Pruitt was interviewed, that was last Thursday, Tennessee made a move to fire him. Tennessee says it was on Monday, but the real information shows that it was more likely over the weekend that Tennessee made a final decision to fire the head coach.
And when the announcement was made, some of the language that was used in that news conference, which in itself drew a lot of questions about the way it was conducted, but nevertheless, some of the language that was used, you know, when you say that there were some violations were stunning or shocking, or I've forgotten exactly the administration's language, but it was not, they did not soft pedal it.
No, they didn't. And I'll be honest with you, I don't find what they said to be all that believable, because if you saw comments from Mark Stoops, the head coach at Kentucky, who said he was not surprised one bit, that is something that can be backed up by a lot of people, because there have been rumors that have not been difficult to find for the last couple of years about what Tennessee was doing in recruiting. And to me, it's more than a coincidence that Tennessee became very interested in what Jeremy Pruitt and his coaching staff were doing in recruiting once the 2020 season fell apart. So if Tennessee's administration, it was the chancellor, the president, and the outgoing athletic director, Philip Fulmer, sitting at that table saying that they were really surprised by what Jeremy Pruitt was doing, that doesn't speak well to their leadership and their ability to follow what's going on underneath them. As the chancellor, Dondi Plowman, criticized Jeremy Pruitt for not knowing what the people that he hired was doing, why would that not apply to the people sitting at that table?
Well, and which brings up the now retired athletics director and Phil Fulmer, who had been pretty much a legend at the University of Tennessee, won their last national championship as head football coach, and for him to sit there at that table and, as you're addressing, severe or shocking violations in recruiting, when asked, well, what had been going well, and he says recruiting, it certainly came off as tone deaf.
Yes, that's going to be a moment that is replayed and laughed at forever when it comes to Tennessee football, and unless things can get going in a good direction quickly. But, that's an example of what I'm talking about with questionable leadership there from Tennessee. And by the way, I've overall been impressed by Tennessee's chancellor and president in their time running university, which has not been that long of a period of time. But now they have to answer for this. And Philip Fulmer is retiring, but he's also leaving with right now his full buyout and his contract. It was odd that the chancellor said that this was never supposed to be a long-term deal for Philip Fulmer. Well, last year they gave him a contract extension through December 2023. They, at that point, appeared to think that it was going to be a long-term deal. Now they're going to buy him out of his contract. So that tells you something about the, quote, retirement. And remember this, 2 months ago, Philip Fulmer publicly expressed disappointment that Tennessee's assistant coaches, all but two, declined to take pay cuts to help the university through the pandemic. Now Philip Fulmer is going to take $1.35 million with him out the door.
Wow. Talking with Josh Ward, the host of Sports 180 on the Sports Animal in Knoxville. And Josh, let me ask this question now. Where are we as far as moving forward with Tennessee's football program? Is Kevin Steele the guy that's most likely to end up with that job?
I think he has a really good chance. It's a complicated question because Tennessee needs to find an athletic director, and I do think Tennessee is going to try to have that done quickly. I think by the end of the month is a realistic scenario. I think when they said as soon as possible, they meant it. And certainly within the next month, Tennessee should have an AD, but I think they're thinking in the next week and a half, have somebody in place, and at that point try to make a decision. And they could table the decision. They could decide to have Kevin Steele be the interim coach for 2021 and then make a long-term decision after that, allow him to maybe audition for the job while they explore other options and an expanded pool. Of course, they might have competition for coaches if they wait into the 2021 season. But I think that the main priority is getting an athletic director. Another priority is trying to hold on to players on the roster, because they had four key players enter the transfer portal on Wednesday. Others are considering doing that. They have signees in the 2021 class that are also considering other options. So there's a lot to get figured out at Tennessee, and they're trying to do it as quickly as possible.
Final question. Will they have to pay Jeremy Pruitt the buyout? What they owe him on the buyout on his contract, which I believe is somewhere in the area of $12 million, which his attorneys, I think the school is saying we're letting him go for cause, which means we don't owe him the money. His attorneys are saying something totally different.
Right. I don't know the answer, but I know that it's not done. Jeremy Pruitt's going to fight for that money. I would, too, if I were in his position. And I'm guessing that his attorneys are going to point out that Tennessee is paying Philip Fulmer, Jeremy Pruitt's boss, his buyout, and they're paying the entire buyout right now is the plan, according to the university. So if I had to guess, the money meets somewhere in the middle. It might take a long time. A fear for Tennessee would be that if they go through a legal battle, that you might have some dirty laundry that gets aired, and that's not what Tennessee needs.
No doubt about it. It's been a tough week, anytime something like that happens, the SEC, while there are certainly fans that will gloat, but it's not a good picture for college athletics, and you want to get it corrected and move on. And so let's hope that that's the case in Knoxville. Talking with Josh Ward, the host of Sports 180 on the Sports Animal in Knoxville. And Josh, thanks so much. We'll be checking back in with you, if it's okay, as this story progresses.
Hey, you got it. Thanks for having me on. Call anytime.
All right. Josh Ward with us here on the Bulldog Roundtable. We'll take a break. We're going to turn our attention to something that says spring to me, and that's college baseball. That's next.
This is the official sports talk station of the Dogs.
It's Bulldog Roundtable on the Fan.
Hi, this is Vince Dooley, and you're listening to the Georgia Bulldog Roundtable on the official sports talk station of the Georgia Bulldogs, 680 The Fan. Now on FM at 93.7, Go Dogs!
Thank you, Coach Dooley, and welcome back. And I promise baseball, and we're going to talk some baseball because it always makes me think that there is warmer weather just around the corner, and that spring may not be that far off. But heading into his eighth year running the University of Georgia baseball program is our Ike Cousins head baseball coach, Scott Strickland. And, Scott, appreciate you joining us this morning. I know you've got to be as excited as anybody to baseball this year might well signal that we're ready to move on from this pandemic.
Yeah, there's no question. And, it started about 10 and a half months ago. Our basketball team was winning in the tournament, and we're on the bus to go, number one versus number two in the country to start off the SEC when we're heading to Florida. And next thing you know, we get a phone call and told us to turn the bus around. And before we even get back to Athens, the season was canceled. So it just happened so fast. And like I said, it's 10 and a half months since we've played a game, and our guys are excited to get back on the field.
Well, if this game's all about pitching, you lost a couple of great ones last year to the pro draft. And just kind of bring us up to speed on where we are heading into this year. I know you had another top 10 recruiting class, and you've got, about 20 players returning?
Yeah, we do have a lot of depth on the mound. And, for us, the question mark is going to be the back end of the bullpen, which is a pretty big question. And it's an important question to answer. We've got a lot of young guys and a lot of good arms that can fill in there. But these guys didn't play summer baseball, and fall was different. We didn't do the things in the fall that we normally do. So, we're still trying to answer some of those questions. But the starting rotation is going to be as good as anyone in the country, with C.J. Smith and Ryan Webb and Jonathan Cannon. All three guys could pitch in the big leagues. And Ryan and Jonathan Cannon are projected to go in the top three, four rounds of the draft. So we feel really good about our starting pitching. Need to figure out, the bullpen and the order and who's going to close and things like that. And we've got a month to do that and a lot of really good candidates. But you mentioned Emerson Hancock and Cole Wilcox, just two of the best pitchers to ever pitch in the SEC, just so talented. And they'll be in the big leagues very, very soon. And that's the tough thing to handle. And it is what it is. We had our opportunity. We had a great club last year. We were ranked number two in the country, and things stopped. And you know what? We can't feel sorry for ourselves. We have to turn the page and move on. I feel bad for those guys because they came to Georgia to compete for national championship. Didn't work out that way, but you know what? The calendar turns, and we're ready to get after it this year.
No, you were right on the cusp, as you mentioned, headed down to Gainesville when all of this fell apart last March. And Scott, that's something else. Now as that vaccine is getting into arms daily, and we are all hopeful that things will improve here rapidly, is what the hope is. But baseball being close, what will be some of the challenges that will still be presented with the pandemic still ongoing, even if it is diminishing?
Well, just the travel, having to test before we go. So if we travel on a Thursday to play a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, we'll have to test on Wednesday, get the results on Thursday, and hold our breath that we don't have someone that tests positive. And the thing that scares you is, there are a lot of false positives out there that happen. Once that positive hits, then you have to contact trace. And then you have to go back and look at the kids that were around it, that kid's roommates, maybe someone that he was standing next to in the bullpen for, 10 or 15 minutes, and they get contact trace and they get wiped out. And that's what we're all concerned about, is just the uncertainty of going into a weekend, everybody feels good, everyone's ready to go, and then all of a sudden we're not playing. And that's a reality. I hope it doesn't happen. And we're taking precautions. You know, we're trying to keep distance as much as we can. We're wearing our masks. We're preaching to these guys about what they do when they leave, when they go back to their dorms or their apartments and who they're hanging out with. And that's the thing that people need to understand. These kids are making a sacrifice. You know, they're not going out. You know, they're not going home to see their family. A lot of these kids aren't going to see their family for a while. And it's a challenge for them. And so I hope people take that into account, that these kids aren't robots. They don't just go out and play. They've got other things going on in their lives, and we have to take all that into account.
Yeah, and you've got a very ambitious schedule, too, a full 56-game schedule, including 30 games in the SEC, and the season opener is February 19th at Foley Field, which, as I mentioned, you know, we're just a month away from that. So it's an ambitious schedule to get through.
Yeah, and I'm happy that the SEC, we all decide, we put our heads together. For the last 3 months, we've been talking about the schedule and how we're going to do it. We went back and forth. You know, do we move the season back? Do we play 40 games over 10 weekends? Do we play 12 weekends and play 36 games? We had a bunch of different models we all talked about. At the end of the day, we decided let's stay as status quo as possible, which is the normal 14-week schedule with 56 games possible. We don't have to get to 56. The NCAA has eased off on that. So we might play fewer games. We just don't know. But we just made the decision, let's stay as normal as possible. You're going to see a lot more regional travel in the non-conference schedule. We had non-conference weekends canceled because of travel, and everyone's dealing with that right now. Everyone's scrambling to try to get their schedule. So I feel really good about where we are right now, because I'm getting emails, you know, 3, 4, 5 emails a day from other coaches. Hey, we have openings this weekend. We don't have an opponent. We're a month away from the season. So it's really tough. It's a challenge. The schedule of the last 3 weeks, that's all we've been doing, is trying to figure it out. We're really, really close. There could still be some changes, but as of right now, we feel pretty good about where we are schedule-wise.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about the conference, because, you know, always the SEC, you know, sort of leads. It's sort of the top of the mountain for college baseball. But your pitching staff, you said, we're going to have great starting pitching, and that's always a good sign. Who else in the conference will challenge this year?
Well, to put it in perspective, there's 4 preseason polls that come out from 4 different publications, and among those, 11 out of the 14 teams have been ranked. We've been ranked as high as 12. We've got Florida is pretty much the consensus number one team in the country. They have almost everybody back with another top recruiting class coming in. Vanderbilt's pitching is going to be very good. Ole Miss is going to be very good. Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State, Auburn, South Carolina, Tennessee. I mean, you just go right down the line. It's a loaded conference. It's probably the most talented the conference has ever been. And that's saying a lot, but I think top to bottom, when you talk about the freshmen, we only had a 5-round draft with professional baseball, so a lot of kids that normally would have been drafted and maybe gone into professional baseball are now freshmen in college. So across the board, college baseball will be as good as it's ever been this year at every school, and it is going to be an absolute bear of a schedule. It's going to be a challenge, but should be a lot of fun.
Scott, cannot thank you enough for your time this morning. You've got me excited now. I'm always excited for the start of baseball, but now really excited to get this underway. And again, the season opener is February 19th, and that will be at Foley Field. Scott Strickland, all right, Cousins head baseball coach, here with us on the Bulldog Roundtable. Our thanks to all of you in the Dog Nation for being with us here today. Let's have a great Bulldog Day, everybody.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.